This is Fantasy Football Friday with Ty Richardson.
Welcome into episode 2 of Fantasy Football Friday in 2020. Want to go to the phone lines and welcome in Sigmund Bloom, co-owner of footballguys.com, a fantastic writer. Also, you can hear him on the Audible podcast. Sigmund, thanks so much for making some time for us, man.
Yeah, it's an exciting time with the NFL back, and I think that for everybody who still enjoys it, not just Thursday night's game whetting our appetites for more football, but just that familiar feeling that we're about to see a lot of things that are different from our expectations, matching our expectations, and otherwise keep us thinking.
There's no doubt in my mind that Deshaun Watson is an incredible quarterback, but Sigmund, looking at that roster, who is he going to throw the ball to, man?
Well, it's Will Fuller. He's going to zero in on Will Fuller, and certainly in fantasy football, if you have Will Fuller, you're really happy. Hopefully you played him last night. You want to get every bit of production you can while he's healthy. After that, the alarming thing is the lack of offensive line play for him and the lack of structure. This was Tim Kelly's first game as a play caller. Kansas City's defense isn't a murderer's row. In fact, Baltimore's defense up next week is going to be tougher. And then the Steelers' defense up the week after that is going to be even tougher. So this team could be looking at 0-3. And you just wonder if they're well behind Indianapolis and Tennessee now.
Another guy that really stood out to me last night is Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Now, I watched him a lot being in SEC country, watching LSU a number of times last season. A little surprised that he was the first running back taken off the board in this past NFL draft. And I actually, Sigmund, had the unfortunate news of playing him last night. Luckily, he was stuffed to the goal line at one point, so he didn't go for 20-plus. But he did have 18 against me. What's his projection look like from a fantasy standpoint the rest of the way?
Well, if you took him in a fantasy draft, you probably took him 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th. And I don't know if he would be there if there are drafts happening today, tomorrow. And there are some in high-stakes contests that still draft after that first Thursday night game. Even with the problems at the goal line, which were the blocking as much as Edwards-Helaire, who did look small whenever he had to face NFL tacklers, you still had him just carving through the defense. Andy Reid more than happy to use him heavily. And we didn't really see what he can do in the passing game, and we know from his game at LSU that he'll shine there. So as Kansas City is pushed more, it was really a breeze for them last night. Edwards-Helaire looks magnificent. He's everything that they hoped he would be. Kansas City's offense is everything that we know that it is. So Edwards-Helaire looks like a wonderful investment.
Hey, Sigmund, it's been 7 months since we got our last NFL game. Was there anything you noticed last night that stood out maybe aesthetically, but with all the lack of information we have, were there any trends, bad tackling you caught on to last night that surprised you?
Not really. Maybe the offensive line play for the Texans. At least you want to make that excuse for them so that you have some hope of it getting better. I think that it actually resembled surprisingly regular football. I mean, a typical regular season game. So we often see choppy games in week one anyway. I think that maybe one of the things we can see here is just, NFL players are really well-honed professionals because of the way that they're on the spot and such a small sample size. So few plays, so much hinge on those plays, unlike other seasons, like a basketball season or a hockey season or a baseball season. So, yeah, I don't think it's going to make a big difference other than the typical week one rusty play.
Back to fantasy here for a second. There's been such little information. We don't have any preseason games. It feels to me like the only way you can get solid information is going to The Athletic or one of these sites that covers the teams and trying to interpret kind of what they're saying. Do you have any unorthodox tricks or tips, maybe things you wouldn't do previously that you might apply this year just with sort of the, imminent danger where I feel like at some point this year, probably multiple times, we're going to have an outbreak or two within a team?
Yeah, I think so. I do think that we'll have to watch for Sunday morning because we had that issue during the preseason when 5 or 6 teams had 10, 12 positives. They were false positives. They were suspected to be false positives from the beginning. But if that happens on a Saturday or Sunday, we're going to see those players sit. So really, I think false positives are a bigger problem than positives right now. And then we'll see. You know, we'll see about the player behavior. They're not going to be in a bubble, unlike the NBA, unlike the NHL. You know, we did see baseball have to push through a couple of teams having their games postponed. College football's already done that. So maybe that's the thing. Because college football's already had the Louisiana Tech Baylor game postponed, when the NFL has to postpone games. And, hey, they might have to postpone a game this weekend or move it because of the wildfires in California. So that's just the kind of year 2020 is.
Was there a player last night, and now that we actually got an on-field product here, maybe as far as role percentage, as far as how he was used in the offense, as far as fantasy is concerned, that maybe changed your mind according to what your projections were going into the season?
Well, David Johnson looks like old David Johnson. That was probably the most striking reveal. Jordan Akins was a guy who played to the level of demanding more touches, I think, with what he did with the two times he got his hands on the ball, broke three tackles on one catch, scored a touchdown on the other. So he's somebody that's definitely on our radar that wasn't on our radar going into the game last night. Otherwise, there's disappointment from guys like Randall Cobb and Duke Johnson. And Brandon Cooks is a little banged up. Sammy Watkins still looks viable. The fantasy community maybe moved on from him too quickly. And I will say I'm a little bit worried about Deshaun Watson, even though he pulled out the numbers during garbage time. We don't want to have to be depending on garbage time for him to bail us out. And that's not what you were thinking when you took him in the fifth or sixth round. And again, if he doesn't look good against Baltimore next week, now you're going to week three against Pittsburgh and maybe benching a quarterback that you took to be your starter.
Speaking with Sigmund Bloom, footballguys.com on Fantasy Football Friday. Last year, I remember us talking about the outlook, Sigmund, on the Steelers.
Yeah.
It didn't end up being what a lot of us wanted. This year, I drafted Juju Smith-Schuster. I'm excited about him and Big Ben being back. What does his outlook look like this fantasy football season with Big Ben quarterbacking this year?
It looks great. He actually is in good shape. His arm is good. It's making all the throws. He's even saying that the elbow bothered him for years, so maybe he could be even better. And then you look around at what he has: Juju, Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool, James Washington. He also likes Eric Ebron, his new tight end. This team has Matt Canada now as a consultant on offense. Exotic things like pre-snap motion and play action passing could be a bigger part of the offense now that they have his input. So I think everything is looking up for Ben Roethlisberger and for the Steelers. But as we can see last night, Kansas City is going to set the pace. They're in their own division. They have Baltimore to measure up against, although they took Baltimore to overtime last year without Roethlisberger. So we'll certainly be looking forward to when those two teams meet.
Sigmund, I forget which one of your coworkers was on the Jerry Jeudy hype train, but I drafted both Courtland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy. Where do you stand with the former Alabama wide receiver that's one of the best college wide receivers we've seen in quite some time?
What I'm hearing from my co-host, Cecil Lammy, who works radio and covers the Broncos in Denver, is that Jeudy could be the number one for Drew Lock right away.
Woo!
And he can get open at will in practice no matter who's on him, and Lock is really locked in on him. So I think that especially Monday night against Tennessee, you have potential problems with the Denver defense, which means that Tennessee could really get in a groove with their running game and their play-action passing, forcing Drew Lock to pass more. I wouldn't be shocked if we see Jeudy put up 7, 8, 9 catches and be the kind of player that we just put in our fantasy lineup and leave in our fantasy lineup for the rest of the year. That's with a healthy Sutton or without a healthy Sutton. And also watch out for Noah Fant, again, with a Sutton banged up. Maybe he's also had a good camp, and he could be a bigger part of this pass offense. I think Denver's going to have to pass more to hang in without any healthy pass rushers right now.
One of his cohorts at Alabama, Amari Cooper, has been in the storylines, and I heard y'all discussing him as well. But I want to discuss his teammate. Now, my co-host, Evan, big-time Oklahoma Sooner fan, CeeDee Lamb was one of the best wide receivers that I got a chance to watch last year. What kind of connection are him and Dak Prescott going to have in Dallas in 2020?
Good. Lamb has been terrific in training camp, and he has been a natural, a lot of football IQ, a lot of ability, advanced for a rookie. This is going to be a tremendous, productive offense, an efficient offense. And CeeDee Lamb's going to get some of the better matchups. Well, the great thing is, you know, we look at week one playing the Rams. Okay, Jalen Ramsey is going to cover Amari Cooper. That means that CeeDee Lamb and Michael Gallup are going to get cornerbacks that they're more likely to win against. I won't be surprised if Lamb is the most productive receiver in this offense this year. I think it's going to be an offense reminiscent of the Stokely and Wayne and Harrison offense in Indianapolis. Or Bolden, Fitzgerald, and Preston, I think, were the last 3,000-yard receivers on one team with Kurt Warner. That's what we're looking at here. And I expect Lamb, like Judy, to hit the ground running.
I'm already mocking up busts in Canton for what CDs is going to look like. That's definitely a hill I'm going to die on. And I think a lot of people who, maybe the national people, who didn't even really watch Oklahoma that heavily last year, CeeDee Lamb wasn't done any favors by Jalen Hurts. And I know Jalen Hurts is the sort of the name because he was played for Alabama and then Oklahoma, and he did go to New York for the Heisman. But, you know, there were several games last year that a lot left to be desired with why didn't Lamb get more targets. Sigma, back to fantasy here real quick. They always say, you know, be water and be flexible. And I think one of the disconnects between maybe just a regular NFL fan and a fantasy football player is sometimes bad players produce in fantasy football just because of opportunity. And, you know, there's a guy you might start week one that you probably wouldn't start the rest of the year. Are there any guys, and I know there are, who are a couple guys that stand out as far as this week one in that, okay, opportunity, matchup, really looking heavily at these two guys right now?
Yeah, I mean, not so much matchup, but opportunity for James Robinson in Jacksonville. You know, they have two receiving backs behind him. They're playing Indianapolis. I think that is a tough matchup. So I wouldn't have overwhelming expectations for him, but I do think you're going to get 15, 18 touches from him, which is a lot more than you can say for some other running backs that maybe you drafted to start for you, like Ronald Jones or David Montgomery or Leonard Fournette. So I think that that's something that lines him up for a potential good game. And Antonio Gibson, although I believe a lot more in Antonio Gibson than James Robinson, but, you know, this is another player after Adrian Peterson was released that just seems like by default will get a lot of touches, maybe even in the passing game against Philadelphia.
If you're a Antonio Gibson fan, it's really all broken your way in the past 3 weeks with just Geis, and then it's pretty clear what they want to do. Ty mentioned I am a big Baltimore fan, and I certainly, you know, I don't like the Steelers, but the games they played the last decade, they're always close. You know, they're always fun. Lamar Jackson had a spectacular fantasy campaign last year. Do you see any regression, not even from a win percentage with his team, but is he going to regress with those fantasy numbers? Because it almost feels impossible to recreate something like that.
Well, but what he did felt impossible before the season. So he's already shown that he can blast through expectations that we have. He's only in his third year. He's only in the second year of this offense that is really crafted. What's really exciting about Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, and we'll see if we can say this about Kyler Murray this year, is they're in offenses that really are crafted around their specific skill and talent set that allows them to play in their comfort zone. And that's one of the exciting things, because Lamar Jackson this year has a healthy Marquise Brown, speaking of Oklahoma receivers. Mm-hmm. He has Devin Duvernay, speaking of Big 12 receivers with speed. He has Miles Boykin in year two, who's a big high-speed receiver. And they also have J.K. Dobbins, one of the most exciting runners from last year. So defenses have a lot more to think about, and they're already focused mostly on Lamar Jackson. So absolutely this offense could be just as efficient. And I think just like last year and just like last night, the worry is that they run away and hide from teams, and then in the second half don't really have to keep their pedal to the metal. That's the only thing that's going to limit Lamar Jackson this year.
The one thing I worry about maybe a little bit with Baltimore is the offensive line, just in that, you know, multi-time Pro Bowler Marshall Yanda retires,
right?
And even Patrick McCurry Matt Skura last year, who tore everything you couldn't tear in a knee in that right. Monday night game against Los Angeles, and now DJ Fluker at guard, and is Skura healthy? You know, that so much of what they do is sort of contingent upon how dominant that line was at times last year, and I think that's something to watch this year in regards to, you know, that's one of those things that if that starts to go, the rest of it can certainly regress a little bit.
Yeah, Skura's back, and he seemed to have a miraculous timeline recovery from that injury, but absolutely that's something to watch, that guard position opened up. You know, that being said, I still think that Lamar Jackson forcing the defense to play 11-on-11 football, it almost blocks a player before the ball snaps because there's so much tension on him. But this is just me speaking as a Steelers fan that is resigned to the idea of the Ravens being at the top of the division now. That being said, the Steelers blitzed him a lot last year. Again, they took him to overtime in that game without Roethlisberger. So, you know, there are ways to slow him down, even if the offensive line is good.
That was the one time he looked mortal all year, was that week 4 or 5 in Pittsburgh.
Didn't they lose to the Titans in the...
He had over 500 yards, man.
Sigmund, another quarterback that I want to talk about is Dak Prescott. I picked him. I'm excited about him. We were talking about CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup. We know about Ezekiel Elliott and that offensive line. I'm still wondering if they focus on the run too much, where his fantasy value won't get to where I think it's going to be. And all, in addition to like Skip Bayless's comments earlier this week, I think that's going to motivate him out of his mind this season. Just his fantasy value this year, and how much you think that Kellen Moore and that offense focus on the passing game.
Well, the sky's the limit. I mean, this is another offense like the Baltimore offense, like the Kansas City offense. How do you defend it? What do you decide to try to take away when they can beat you in so many ways? So absolutely, Dak Prescott, if your fantasy strategy was, even though Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson are exciting, you're going to wait a couple of rounds after they get taken and take Dak Prescott, I think that's a very sound strategy, and he could be up in their stratosphere for fantasy, even though he's not as talented as they are because of the offense. And you mentioned Kellen Moore. I think Mike McCarthy is going to be more humble and allow a lot to stay intact. He said he was the one who has to learn the most as far as the Cowboys offense this year. So that's exciting. You just need the offensive line to stay healthy. You know, they're replacing Travis Frederick, speaking of top offensive linemen that are retired. And Lyle Collins and Tyron Smith were both banged up in training camp. So that's a position where they don't have any depth. So, you know, these are things to watch. But right now, it's all systems go.
Continuing on the quarterbacks conversation, Cam Newton looked deflated last year, and now it's like, oh, he's in New England, he's in Foxborough, he's got new life. Belichick, Newton, what are you expecting in the post-Tom Brady area up north this year?
Well, we might have to be patient because Cam Newton is still getting his feet under him in New England's offense, and he's basically got Julian Edelman and James White and Rex Burkhead, I mean, nothing in the passing game. I mean, we'll see about N'Keal Harry, see what he can do with Demir Byrd, his old teammate, but he's definitely outgunned, even against a team like Miami in week one, whose defense has improved a lot. That being said, Josh McDaniels is going to mold the offense around him. Josh McDaniels, when he was in charge in Denver, drafted Tim Tebow, so he understands how to get the most out of a running quarterback and use that to put the defense at a disadvantage. So I think I now admit that I'm even rooting for Cam Newton to prove that the league, you know, really disrespected him by letting him be out there for so long. That being said, it could just be that the league let him be out there for so long because his body's broken and he's not going to hold up for very long.
Sigmund, last question before we let you go. It's been football to this point. I don't know if you caught the man in Omaha, Nebraska, who went on a 2-minute rant in a council meeting about boneless wings. I pounded 24 boneless, I'm going to call them nuggets, from Buffalo Wild Wings last night. Where do you stand on the boneless wings versus naked tenders versus nuggets debate? Or is it okay to say boneless wings?
It's okay to say it. I get it. You know, I mean, it's an entirely different part of the chicken. The taste, the fat content, everything is different. And I understand, though, just referring to them as boneless wings, and I'll take fried chicken of any and all shapes and sizes and sauces. And I want to tell you all, down here in New Orleans, the best fried chicken is at the gas station.
Let's go. I remember you telling me this last year.
It is. And you know what else they have in Louisiana on the back roads? Boudin on the get your fried boudin ball at the gas station. Get your cracklings. This is the best state in the country for roadside eat.
Sigmund, before you came on, I told you that my roommate, or not my roommate, but my former college friend, he's getting married. We've already got his bachelor trip booked for 2021. I am excited to get back to New Orleans, Louisiana, go to Pat O'Brien, slug some hurricanes, and do everything down there that weekend, man.
Beautiful. Welcome.
I can't wait. Sigmund Bloom, co-owner of footballguys.com. You can listen to him on the Audible podcast. Also read his stuff on footballguys.com as well. Sigmund, as always, man, we appreciate catching up and you joining us on Fantasy Football Friday.
My pleasure.
Hey, this is Mike Clay from ESPN Fantasy. You're listening to Fantasy Football Friday.
That was a fantastic interview with Sigmund Bloom of footballguys.com. You know, an interesting backstory on Sigmund. His friend and him were hit by a drunk driver a while ago, and that really altered his life growing up. And he decided from then that he really wanted to do what he wanted to do. He's working another job, and he kind of, fantasy football at the time, he's 45, I'm 25. Fantasy football at the time was a very small niche. And he took a giant step forward and now has become a really pivotal part of fantasy football. So really good catching up with Sigmund. He always gives great content. Had a great interview last year with you, Evan, and so we've talked a little bit in the offseason about doing this. We're finally going to do it. There's a possibility that this could be on our actual radio stations moving forward. That will be to be determined based on how this goes, based on the timing, and just how it flows and whatnot. But excited to have you on. I know we've been friends for a little while now, and as far as fantasy football goes, you're above me in the knowledge. I happen to work for a radio station and have this equipment, and that's why I'm going to be relying on you heavily this season in terms of your fantasy football knowledge and helping us guide through our listeners, because it's pretty known at this point that I'm bad at fantasy football. I'm on the record about that, but I enjoy it nevertheless.
Well, at least my life's work in something that really will never help me in life in any category will finally pay off. I'm not in the charitable organizations. I'm not out building schools and buildings. And for the homeless, I am talking about fantasy football.
Listen, this is very important to a lot of different people. There's a lot of money on the line. There's a lot of punishments on the line. A lot of listeners here on ESPN Arkansas, hitthatline.com, and really just across the state, and people that listen outside of the state to this program, they're relying on us. And that's why we have really good experts come on, like a Sigmund Bloom, like a Mike Clay. We're going to have a lot of impressive guests that you'll be really surprised at, the people that we will get on this program here on Fantasy Football Friday, because we want to help you with your lineups. We want to help you kind of distinguish what's going on. And this is going to be an odd year, man. COVID affecting a lot of different things, not only at the college level, but what we're talking about, the NFL, and how that's going to affect is fantasy football.
It is. There's never been a year like this. There will probably never end up being a year like this. You can kind of take that one of two ways. You can say, well, it's going to be that much harder with all the lack of this information. No preseason is crazy because we're basically taking these coaches who lie all the time at their word as far as who they like and playing possum. And, you know, there's that joke on Pete Carroll. He hypes up everyone on his team. So if you listen to Pete Carroll, they're all Hall of Famers. But also, if you put the time in, because, you know, it's such a hard year and there's so much lack of information, if you do put the time in and do catch up on trends and can make the right moves, it's going to be easier for you to go past the people in your league. If you put in the extra work, you put in the extra time, you pay attention. Fantasy football,
and
you
listen
always...
to Fantasy Football Friday, of course.
Well, that's a given. Fantasy football is so easily summed up in, you know, you get out what you put in.
What apps do you use? We have the Sleeper app that my group uses for updates. I know there's the Yahoo app, the NFL Sports app. What app do you use for updates, who you should pick up, who you should put on the trading block, and who you should start that day?
I have a few podcasts I listen to. I think the best thing you can do, it's Twitter.com. I mean, if you follow the right people, There's so much information in regards to these people who cover the teams who are giving you updates in real time. It's a mix between the applications. It's a mix between Twitter.com, and it's really a mix between listening to podcast. You need to get in a podcast Monday through Friday because there's so much happening. Things can change so quick. There's been so many in the last 3 days. You've had Mike Evans and Kenny Galladay, you know, both with injuries. Now Evans doesn't seem
to be. And Corlin Sutton, that's the guy on my roster.
And Sutton today. Man, this thing is moving at the speed of sound. If you don't, you know, if you are not keeping your ears perked up, it will pass you by.
Now Evans practiced yesterday or today. Was that the what I read?
There was a quote unquote optimism for his week one. Okay. His seems to be not as serious, but it's still a guy who people took, you know, very high in every draft. And if you take Mike Evans, he's your wide receiver one or wide receiver two. So it's certainly pertinent information to your team.
No, absolutely. Legitimately, as we're talking about Mike Evans, I get a notification on my Sleeper app that Mike Evans is going to be listed doubtful for Sunday's game in New Orleans against the Saints. So this is the great thing about applications like this, Ev. Real time, you know what you're getting, because you got to make these decisions on the fly. Like, I don't know about you, I'm checking my Yahoo Fantasy app at 11:55. Like, I am making sure that I don't have anyone on there. We're not getting the last second. Who's doing this? Who's doing that? I got to be up to date on everything, and this is a perfect example of that happening.
Yeah, I always know what time of the year it is when I find myself on fantasy apps like 2 hours a day. It's like the Groundhog Day coming out and checking the shadow. 3 more months of spring or whatever the
heck.
Is that
why you're going to early church? Is that what?
I am going to try to go to early church this Sunday.
I need to, is why I say that as a slight at both of us.
This is a business time of year. It makes you wonder with Mike Evans. So like, does that just Scotty Miller? Are there more targets for him? What do you do with Cameron Brate? Does this elevate O.J. Howard a little bit? I'm just so intrigued, and I almost asked Sigmund. I had it queued up. I don't have any idea what this Buccaneers offense is going to look like.
Oh, I don't either.
The expectations.
Godwin, all those guys you just listed.
I mean, and now it's Fournette. I mean, they have weapons galore. You know, with Peyton Manning at the end of his career, I always thought it was so ironic that the second Super Bowl Peyton Manning won was when he was a liability. And his defense, it's Von Miller, strip sack, and Cam Newton. You know, to win his second Super Bowl. He spent so many years at the top of the sport. With ending his season second divisional round, AFC Championship game, there were so many failures in his career when he was at the top of his sport, and at the end of his year was when he got that illustrious second ring.
Can you name, outside of Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne, like, and you, I know you can, but like, who was a legitimate player on those teams that Peyton Manning could throw the ball to?
Dallas Clark.
And Dallas Clark's another one.
Brandon Stokely.
But we're grasping at straws
yes.
here. Like, Clark is one. Is he a Hall of Famer, or is he going to be a Hall of Famer?
Probably not.
Okay.
He had some fun years, though.
He did. Okay, so that's one you could say definitively okay. But outside of those two guys, who both Reggie Wayne and, I almost said Michael Irvin, good grief, Marvin Harrison, those guys are Hall of Famers.
Don't look at Marvin Harrison's Wikipedia page. Marvin Harrison may have killed a guy, allegedly. I don't want to get into
legal
trouble.
Jeez Louise, okay. I did not. Well, you said allegedly, so you're good. But
allegedly. Back to Tampa.
Just completely through. This is what's interesting, though, is I heard, I think it was Field Yates talking about this. The offensive line is a question mark there. Tom Brady has had a great offensive line for many years in New England. Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick have done a fantastic job at protecting him. I couldn't tell you one offensive lineman on Tampa Bay, and I think that's a little concerning to see an older statesman quarterback that is Tom Brady.
I think this is going to go one way or another. I don't see 8-8 for Tampa. I see 12-6, or I see 5-5 whatever it would be. It's just one of those things.
Really good year of disaster is what you're saying.
I don't see middle ground for them. There are so many, like, you can talk yourself into anything you want to with Brady, because you can say, okay, well, he doesn't like the fact that Belichick has had all the success, so let me come out and show everybody I still got it. You can win because of me, right? Or you could take it the other way and say, at this point, he's only interested in winning a Super Bowl. So maybe that means I do take a backseat role and let these other skilled guys, you know, get most of the limelight. To me, it's the most intriguing story in football, because it's such an irrelevant team, Tampa. I mean, as far as they won a Super Bowl, obviously, but you don't think of, when you think of NFL teams, Tampa Bay is in like your sixth or seventh sentence there.
Yeah, it's tough. We've talked about Tampa Bay. We've talked about other teams. How about the action we actually saw last night? Houston Texans traveling to Kansas City, taking on Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs edge it out 34-20. Bet on the game's over last night. It was at 54. It pushed. That's the most Vegas thing ever. The first game of the NFL season, pushes on the over-under.
I saw Big Cat's tweets laden with F-words that inferred he didn't get it, but I know my roommate got it at what it hit, so it seemed like it was one of those middle zones there.
My roommate got it at 53.5, so he won, I think, $20 last night. Good for Jay, but it was just funny to see that I'm back betting and stuff. Fantasy, back betting during the NFL season, going to be betting more extensively with college football. But let's talk about what we saw last night. Let's start with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Now, this was a guy at LSU. Unfortunately, you saw what he can do to a defense.
And he was even hurt that game, and I still got to see more than I wanted to.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, he did.
Chris Curry, their backup, came in and was a wrecking ball. Man, that kid looked great, too. Of course he did.
Yeah, so it seems like the rich just keep getting richer. Let's list off the Chiefs' weapons for a sec. You start with Patrick Mahomes, who's the best quarterback in all of football. Mecole Hardman. Sammy Watkins, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Who am I missing?
DeMarcus
Robinson, who dropped a touchdown dropped another ball last night. I know that was a little frustrating for some binge fantasy owners, but
he's a deep guy.
I mean, these are guys that are just speedy. What I saw, and what I was talking to Tommy about on the morning rush, this legitimately looks like LSU in 2019, when you have Thaddeus Moss, you have Jamar Chase, you have Justin Jefferson, you have Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who's coincidentally on both teams, and I'm forgetting the other wide receiver, who the third guy is now the number one guy for the Tigers this year, but they're just loaded everywhere, and you can only bracket a certain amount of guys, or you know, if you load the box, it's one-on-one coverage. If you don't load the box, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is beating you. Andy Reid is going to have a really fun time in 2020-2021.
There was a play last night where I think DeMarcus Robinson caught like a 13-14 yard pass, and Collinsworth said, you know, that's their fifth best weapon right there. And I don't know, they have to be, as far as like your team being demoralized, as far as playing a team that's demoralizing. The only team I can think of in any sport were the Golden State Warriors, when a 15-point lead, you know, felt like a 4-point lead.
Maybe when some Yankees team. I mean, you're
not
like
even
this.
Not even just because baseball.
Not in the last 20 years, but like think of some of the Yankees teams, like from
Jeter, Martinez.
Yeah, years and years ago.
But you know, when you're watching them play, it's like you almost have to be hoping for a deflected interception, a dropped pass, some fluke handoff exchange fumble. You can't even, you don't expect to stop them just the normal way of playing defense. It's like they're so overwhelmingly potent, you almost have to cheer and hope for fluky things to happen. That feels like it's the only way you're going to stop them.
And you think going up 24-0 in a playoff game would be fluky enough, right? Look at the Houston Texans in the divisional game last year, and what do Patrick Mahomes and company do? They come storming back and win that game by like 20-something? I mean, that game was just...
They were winning, I believe, at halftime.
Yeah, it was unbelievable how quick and methodical, which like you're talking, the Golden State Warriors is a perfect example, because you can be up on Golden State by 20-something, all of a sudden, within 5 minutes... you're losing. And that's what you've seen with Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, is their ability to do that. It wasn't necessarily on display last night because they pretty much had the game in hand in its entirety. But watching the game last night, I didn't notice a lot of differences in gameplay outside of just the lack of fans and just kind of the weird feel there. And the no slide from Chris Collinsworth would just hurt me last
that,
night.
That was painful.
What about you? Just the gameplay itself.
I don't even attribute this to what we've been going through right now, but on the Chiefs' second touchdown drive, I think they went 16 plays, 91 yards to go up 14-7. It showed the Texans' defense, and they looked like they had played 7 games in 7 days. They just look absolutely gassed. And you know, Andy Reid, he can do whatever he wants to do. It's his funhouse, and everyone's sort of in his world. He can kill you one of a thousand ways. On that drive,
death by a thousand cuts.
They handed it off, you know, probably 80% of the drive, and it's like, so now they can do this too, right? Now, I mean, when I watched that game last night, at any given play, it felt like they could go play action for 70 yards. Now that they have a guy, and I will say this as an aside, and I don't want my Chiefs friends to get mad at me. Do you think Edwards-Helaire is a bell cow? Because he doesn't look like Derrick Henry. He's deceivingly thick. You know, he's a big boy, but I don't. I mean, 20 carries a game. You know, getting hit 20 times. I that would be something I would think be in the back of my mind.
Well, there was a couple. cuts and pivots that he made last night to show Christian McCaffrey-like qualities, which is the kind of example, if you want to point to someone that doesn't look like he belongs at the running back position, that's going to get 20-something.
He looks like a Christian rapper. McCaffrey looks like he's a Christian rapper.
And you're watching this, you're like, how is he able to do that? McCaffrey's built, he's thick, it's surprising how much muscle he has on him. Edwards-Helaire is the same way, but I'm kind of with you. I'm curious to see, because there was a time last night where he got stuffed in the goal line. You could attribute that to blocking. I think Sigmund was discussing that earlier. I'm curious to see if he continues to get 20-plus carries a game. That's really going to impact his fantasy value, because if he's getting 20-plus carries a game in that offense, his fantasy value is going to be off the charts based on what we saw in game one. So the gameplay, you mentioned the defense, like at the second, not the second drive, but the second scoring drive for Kansas City, J.J. Watt and company, they just look gassed. What other type of changes could we expect to see, not just from a finesse standpoint, but just the regular season, and just kind of how it impacts fantasy with COVID in 2020?
I don't know if this is a result of COVID. There seemed to be a lot of injuries last night. I know the Chiefs lost Javarius Ward. I think he fractured his hand. At one point, it looked like the Texans were down to their third running back because Johnson was looked at, and then Duke Johnson all of a sudden is walking off the field. So I would say a mix between, I don't think that the tackling, I think, is going to be something these guys haven't seen. A live gameplay type speed. I think that's going to matter probably early on. The thing I've heard is the last condensed season we had in 2011, I believe, due to the lockout, all the overs hit the first 3 or 4 weeks. So people say, well, it's going to take the offense's time to catch up, when in actuality, it took the defense time to catch up. So I certainly think that's one thing you can see. Injuries and game speed. I also wonder, these coaches, they're such madmen. They've had really 7 months now without anyone watching them play. I think there's going to be a lot more trick plays. I mean, everything's almost off the table in that sense, and I do wonder, it's like these defenses, can you run a flea flicker, a double reverse, a fumble rooski? I wouldn't expect a fumble rooski to be ran, but I think you might see more trick plays too. That's just my personal opinion.
And you think about the lack of film that you're talking about, the lack of really anything to this point. I would hope to see that, because that's going to make the games more exciting, more enjoyable, and it's not like what we saw last night wasn't enjoyable. It's the number one quarterback against what, a top five, top six quarterback, mm-hmm, Deshaun Watson. I'm curious, though, if we can see Deshaun continue to develop as an NFL guy with the lack of weapons that he has around him. I'm hoping he does. So we got our first Thursday night game in. I am typically not eating unhealthy during the week, but as I mentioned earlier, 24 chicken nuggets last night, and I say chicken nuggets, and
you can call them boneless.
Are you okay with calling?
I'm fine with that.
All right, we knocked out a conversation, because I was going to ask you just kind of boneless versus just regular wings. Now I'm a traditional guy, but when it's buy one get one at B-Dubs, what are you going to do?
You take what defense gives you.
And I think I'm going to have to, whether it's going to Buffalo Wild Wings at BOGO or going to JJ's for Flip for Your Burger. These Thursday night, man, they're going to be tough for my diet. I know you, like, once Thursday night hits, all bets are off for you. It's beer, it's food, because you don't have to work on Friday, because you got a 4-day work week, because you put in your 40 hours during the course of Monday through Thursday. I'm going to curious to see what my metabolism does on Thursday night, because I don't think it's any good sign as far as
this is the toughest time of year to stay anywhere close to active. It just starts to tumble and tumble. The fall can really get away from you. No free ads here. I may have gotten two breaded crabs from my good friend at Smileball yesterday with a pound of oysters on the half shell grilled. So wow. I'm already into football mode.
So I'm guessing you didn't go to Hot Works this morning.
No, I may do that today at some point, but then again, I may not, because the Yankees play a doubleheader here starting at 4. So
yeah, there's no chance you make that. We're recording now. It's 3:00 in the afternoon. The idea that you would even bring up that you might go to Hot Works with Fit when the Yankees are playing tonight. Well, by the way, I need to talk to you and Callaway about being Yankees fan. That just irritates the dickens out of me. But I guess we can't really criticize fans for being fans of other team, whatever. That's a story for another day.
Hey, this is Sigmund Bloom with footballguys.com, and you're listening to Fantasy Football Friday.
One of the things, Ev, that you wanted to do was kind of quiz me on fantasy history years ago, like impact players that had just massive games, massive days over the course of fantasy football history. So, indeed, really, man, the floor is yours. Fire away. I don't know how percentage-wise I'm going to do this, but I'm going to give the old college try.
Yeah, I'll say this. These are very hard, and I'm not going to hold it against you if you bat 200 or even less. Zero. There's one in here you should get, but I will just say this. The nostalgia of going back and looking at some of these names, week one, 2008, week one, 2012, how fast some of the shelf life for these players is so small, and that's a little bit, you know, depressing because it's for them, it's not fun to play for 4 years, but it's really nostalgic, and it kind of takes you back to a previous time. So here we go. Okay, so you need to guess the player. I'm going to give you the stat line. I'm going to give you the two teams that play. I'll give you the team that the player played for, and you see if you can give me the player. Okay, this was week one. These are all week ones. Week one, 2011. Jags Titans. This was a Titans wide receiver. Okay, he had 5 catches, 136 yards, 2 touchdowns. That's a heck of a fantasy day.
Kendall Wright.
That's a good guess. First letter of the first name was correct. It's not Kendall Wright. Do you want to guess one more time, or do you want me to give this one away to you?
I just like how you said good guess. Titans wide receiver in 2011. His first name begins with K.
He may have accidentally posted some very lewd activities of himself to his Instagram. I don't know if that helps at all.
I don't know if that helps. What college did he go to? Give me the college.
I don't know. You know what? I got 5 of these here, so I'll get this one's Kenny Britt.
Okay, Kenny Britt. Kenny Britt went to,
I don't know,
Houston or North Carolina State. I'm going to double check on that.
Underrated player, Kenny Britt was. Yeah. Always open.
Maybe Rutgers? Hold on. What college did Kenny Britt go to? He went to Rutgers, so I was right. Yeah. I was one out of three, so I guess 3 schools, and I was right. So, yeah, Kenny Britt, that's not that. Now it's kind of, I don't know if I still would have gotten it, but I know that he at least played for the Titans at one point in time.
Okay, so we have week one, 2000.
0-1.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Week one, 2009.
Okay.
This is Browns Vikings.
Okay.
Okay. This Vikings running back.
Like I said, don't say a Browns player in 2009.
No. 25 carries, 180 yards, 3 touchdowns. He actually had 60 yards through the air as well.
Okay, this has got to be like the easy answer, right? It's Adrian Peterson.
There you go.
Okay.
You're on the board. Right. And that was the one there that I was hoping you would get.
Okay.
Okay, we're going to this I'd say this is a novice question here. Maybe a little bit on the tougher side. This is week 1 2013, Buccaneers Jets. Okay, this Buccaneers receiver, week 1 2013, 7 catches, 154 yards. And I'll give you a hint here. This was the second team he played on. The first team he started his career with was the San Diego Chargers. He played with Antonio Gates in San Diego.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I almost said Mike Evans, but Mike Evans was still in college. He was still at Texas A&M Aggie at the time. 2013 Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and you said he's a wide receiver, correct?
He's a wide receiver.
Keyshawn Johnson was way before that. I think you're going to stump me on that. Can you give me the college?
He went to Colorado State. I don't know if that helps, but I think he was at Colorado State.
That does not help. Who is it?
It's Vincent Jackson. Vincent Jackson?
Yeah, I do remember. He was. The Chargers is a good help. I should have probably given a better answer.
All right, here we go. So this is week one.
1-3.
This is week. These are hard questions. No one off the streets just kind of come in and go 5-for-5.
Okay.
Okay, next one. We got week one, 2006. The game was played between the Texans and the Eagles. This is an Eagles wide receiver. Stat line was 6 catches, 141 yards, and 1 touchdown. Okay, so an Eagles wide receiver, 2006. I'll give you a hint here as well. This is a bit morbid, but this is the only way you can really sort of identify this guy. He may have accidentally ran over someone and killed him. That's not the turn I wanted this podcast to take, but I don't have a better hint than that.
What college?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know what college you went to. I should. So that's what we'll do. From here on out, I'll grab those.
Philadelphia Eagles wide receiver.
06, man. I mean, how old were you in 06?
Listen, we've already talked. I talked about this earlier in the program. You have better NFL knowledge. I'm better at college.
I looked these up. I wouldn't have known this.
Okay.
I mean, with the hint,
2006, may or may not have run over someone.
He did. That's not. There's no may or may not there. Stallworth. Stallworth, who's really turned it around, and I think he's made a pretty good media career out of things.
Okay,
so this is the last one here, and I'm going to give you the similar thing. I'll give you a hint here as well. This is week one, 2007. Okay, this is a game played between the Redskins and the Dolphins. This is a wide receiver for the Redskins, okay? 5 catches, 162 yards, and here's the hint, okay? He was such a good thrower, he probably could have played quarterback in the NFL.
2007 Washington Redskins wide receiver.
Yes.
That was such a good quarter, such a good throw. They could probably play quarterback
with his previous team, the the Pittsburgh Steelers. They had several designed.
Cordell Stewart?
Very close. Antoine Randall-El.
Okay.
Cordell Stewart is a solid guess.
Here. Okay. Yeah, that's going to... So I'm 1-for-5. I'll hopefully do better down the stretch. And that's it's always good. It's always fun to go back and look and see different fantasy football highlights. I know for me, Brett Favre throwing those 7 touchdowns when he was a New York Jets quarterback is always entertaining. I was there for you guys' draft as the auctioneer for the Wormhole League, courtesy. Really appreciate Buffalo Wild Wings and Bud Light giving us some stuff for the draft. The punishment for you guys. I'm going to talk about ours for the Manitowoc County Bums League. What is y'all's punishment this season? It's 3-part, right?
You have 1 of 3 options. Okay, so traditionally what we've done is everyone picks a punishment that gets approved by the league, and everyone has an individual punishment. This year, we sort of made things simpler. Somehow, we were spending way too much time on legislating these dang punishments here. So you have 1 of 3 options if you finish last. There's 3 categories: pain, embarrassment, and your wallet. Okay, so you can choose between these 3. The wallet: you have to host a crawfish broil for the league. Okay, so you're probably looking at about 200 to 250 here. You pay for everything. Everyone comes in, drinks, and eats on your dime. The embarrassment: you have to recreate the ESPN body issue calendar. Okay, now I don't know if you've seen any of these pictures with Prince Fielder. Some are great, some are not.
That's good. When you say Prince Fielder, that is the probable body shape for the majority of members of the Wormhole League. That is the best image I can picture of the Wormhole League. There's not a lot of Cristiano Ronaldo's in the Wormhole League. It's more Prince Fielder looking guys.
We're farther on that side of things. And then finally, the pain, which is something I would never for a billion years pick, is at next year's draft, you wear a shock collar, and every time a player is auctioned at over $50, you get zapped. So there's probably 7 or 8 players every year who go over $50. And now you're incentivizing your league mates to spend an extra buck just to see you. I mean, you're going to set records here as far as guys that go for $60. So those are, you can choose between those 3 options.
But it's only, and I'll say this, and I'm with you, I would pick one of the other 2 options, the crawfish boil or the body issue. But those things are going, or the body issue lives forever. The crawfish boil depends, just, it's your money. It's probably about $250.
Quickly in and out. Yes.
Yes. But the shot caller, I mean, the shot caller is going to last you, 20, 30 minutes?
You're not going to be able to enjoy, because you're going to be there for 3 hours. It's the whole draft. I mean, you'd have to be a psychopath to pick that.
But think about it. The $50 bets are not going to last long. Unless they just intentionally, hey, they came together as a coup. They're like, hey, let's just do like 1 big-time player once every 10 picks.
That's exactly what would happen.
I know. Your league mates are kind of psychopaths. So our punishment, you've talked about yours. Our punishment, Evan and I are not in the same leagues. We do. Are you a one-man league guy?
No, I have a couple.
Okay. I'm a one-man league guy. That's what I like to do. I like to focus all my efforts on one league. Our punishment, the Joey Chestnut Hot Dog Challenge. 76 hot dogs in a week. If you fail week 1, you got to try for week 2. If you fail week 2, you're out of league. You got to record every single one of the hot dogs that you eat on video, so we know you're not making it up and we know you're not fabricating.
So is this timed, or you have an entire
over
week?
Over the course of a week, 76 hot dogs.
So you're going to be tanking here. We're going to look up, and you're going to be starting Ryan Fitzpatrick. Like, this just sounds like your dream as much as you love food.
Now, I've done 8 chili dogs in about 20 minutes, and I can't imagine having to do 76. Now, a lot of the league members in the Manitowoc County Bums League said, oh, this is just another week for Ty, which is not actually the case, but it would be easier for me to do it than some of my league mates. I would love to see some of the kids in our league try and do this, because it would be hysterical to see them moan, curse, scream throughout the course of the week. What would be funnier is to see them fail week 1 and then having to go through the punishment of week 2. I'm curious if that ends up happening. The history of our league, unfortunately, I've been to the championship 1 time, never won. It sucks. We've only had a handful of guys in the league of our Teague League, 10 league members that have actually won. What does your league history look like? How long have y'all been doing it? And how many guys in the league have actually won a Wormhole League championship?
We have a great history. I'm 26. I mean, this thing started when it was the grade above me. We started in like 2008, maybe even 2007. So this is this thing's been going on for over 10 years. And some of the early history is a little muddled because we, You know, you're in high school. Kids weren't paying as much attention. You know, but just in the last few years here, it's tough to win. I mean, Connor McGinnis is a 2-time champ. Sam Scalise, who comes in, wins it his first year.
That's embarrassing that y'all let Scalise win the league. For those who don't know who Sam Scalise is, he has no business winning a fantasy football league. That's an embarrassing look for the Wormhole League that he comes in and wins the league. I'll say that straightforward because it is.
I have nothing to retort to that. Fantasy's so hard. Man, it's so much. Even there towards the end when guys are starting to sit out and you're like, okay, these are my options. Like, you know, I don't take a lot of personal offense to it. Now, if you finish like second to last, that's one thing. But
now that's a 12-man league. I'm in a 10-man league. Do you have an opinion? Does it differ on the different leagues? Like, I think 8-man leagues are weak. I think they're very weak. I think the lowest you can go is 10. Like, we're right on the cusp. Like, anything below 10, I think, is a weak league. What are your thoughts on just the number of teams per league and how that correlates for the teams or for the league's perspective outside looking in?
Both are fine. I'm in 10 and 12 man leagues. I prefer a 12 man league because it's competition at its highest. There are plenty of free agents in a 10 man league who would be owned otherwise. You're in a 12-man league. It's 11 a.m. on a Sunday. You have to go grab a guy to play. It is scraping. Remember those Walmart bins where they'd have like Rush Hour and the Elephant Man for like $2 for $7? Like, you're scraping up stuff like that. There's no one to pick
up.
Bottom
of the barrel stuff.
Bottom of the barrel discount bin players. And so it forces so much higher of a level of play in a 12-man league, in my opinion, but both are fine.
As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, I was the auctioneer for your guys' league. Now, we have never done an auction draft. I've never done a dynasty draft in the league I'm currently in. I have done an auction draft previously. Just kind of, we're talking about 8, 10, 12. What are your thoughts on the differences between dynasty, auction, and just kind of the other wrinkles and orients that involve fantasy football?
I will never go back to a snake. I don't mind snakes, and if I'm in a league and that's the method, that's fine. An auction, in my mind, is the only way to do it for this simple reason here. Fantasy football, it's supposed to be a meritocracy, okay? Everyone is supposed to have the same opportunities to construct the team. If you draft 7th in a snake draft, you have no chance to get Christian McCaffrey, okay?
But whose fault is that, though?
It's an arbitrary draft order. You could be 7th, and that was to no fault of your own.
Actually, here's how we do it, because I think it's fair how we do it. Whoever won the previous year gets their pick of any draft pick they want, which should be. The winner should get compensation and that draft selection, and we also do wherever the league draft is being held, the winner gets to pick the location. The winner does not pick. The commissioner picks how we go about picking where each person is picking. This past year, I think Australian rugby or something, like a rugby league or something. We do some weird sport or weird whatever to determine the draft order. So technically, ours is not arbitrary, or ours is arbitrary. You pick your own fate. You just better study and figure out whatever sport or competition that leads to the draft order. But I get the, hey, you're drafting 7. I'd be ticked too if that was the case.
Once you do an auction draft, you understand. I mean, it just takes once and you're like, oh, I've been missing out on this every year. It's okay to be wrong.
Do you guys have half PPR, full PPR, no PPR?
We're half. Okay. We did full last year, and it was a bit too much.
See, that, and I think it's important that you bring that up. So we had a vote in the offseason for half PPR, not full PPR, because I think full, like yourself, is too much. And 4 of us voted yes for half PPR. 6 said no. It was very frustrating because I think it adds an element that makes it a little more difficult. We're always looking for, hey, don't make it as easy as you can when it comes to determining who wins the fantasy. You want some stuff that kind of throws some wrinkles here and there. And I was really frustrated that that didn't happen, that we didn't get it. I hope next year in 2021 that we have that for the Manitowoc County Bumps League.
So you said you prefer half or full?
I would like half PPR. Yeah, half. I don't want full. Full's too much.
We
like
full, and James White was like the number 3 running back on.
See,
the
air. To me is just not like Christian McCaffrey should still be the number 1 guy, not just for his catches, but for his production as well. So
I think the appropriate time to mix in a full point is just to spice things up. You've been in a league for 7 years. Throw it in every now and then just for fun, and then go back to what you kind of prefer.
We have right now, we have a pecking order, a list of 12 guys, their rankings on, if we decided to go to a 12-man league, their order on how they would get added to the league. So it's like, it's a coveted league, man. Like, this has started, my buddy started this their freshman year in college. I think I was added junior year with one of my friends, and Once you get in, you don't want to get out because our
it's
friend group.
It's
a very exclusive league, like the Wormhole League.
Definitely.
Very
so is. That's we don't create anything more than that's what I can hang my hat on. Yeah, that's what I feel like we hang our hats on. Is the most impressive thing we've done is creating this completely ridiculous, stupid ecosystem in which you have grown men actually, doing everything they can to get into a game.
Exactly, acting like barbarians. So, and that is fantasy football as a whole: grown men acting like barbarians. But regardless, if you're 25, 35, 45, or 65. You love it nevertheless. All right, good episode of Fantasy Football Friday, episode 2 of the 2020 season. That's going to do it for Evan Gentry. I'm Ty Richardson, going to have a great interview next week and the rest of the way, so make sure you're paying attention, whether you're listening on SoundCloud, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We appreciate you tuning in to Fantasy Football Friday.
For sure, for sure. I'm getting that for sure.
New fantasy football interviews every Friday on HitThatLine.com.